From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, the weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Carolyn Wara.
We'll speak with Walt Meyer, senior research scientist with the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Boulder, Colorado. Walt joins us periodically to talk about the annual melt of sea ice up in that region, specifically the extent of that melt and the short and long-term causes behind it. Walt, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Let's start right here. We should be at the minimum of sea ice extent up in the Arctic. What's going on?
Well, we are very close to the minimum. This is about the time of year, like you said, that we reach it, but it varies over about a three-week period. We've had it as late as about September 22nd, so sometime next week, and as early as the beginning of September. So we're kind of right in the middle of the window, and it's definitely getting close. But we're not, we can't quite announce it yet. We can't say for sure. It's still, the ice is still dropping, but we can say, it's going to be the second lowest in our satellite record. So we're kind of in the bottom of the ninth inning. The game's not over yet, but the home team is down big, so we kind of know what the result's going to be, but we don't know the final score yet.
Okay, and is that minimum that day or time period when the minimum is reached? Is that getting later and later as you're observing these minimums?
It is slightly, but it's very noisy. I don't think we could say it's significantly getting later because it varies so much, and it varies a lot because of the weather. We're at the point where the sun is setting, things are starting to freeze up in the Arctic. High in the Arctic at the North Pole, things have already frozen up. It's really the fringes that are a little more further south. We also have ocean heat, and it depends on how the winds blow. We've been getting some winds that have been from the south that have been kind of pushing up, bringing up some warm air, kind of pushing the ice edge back. So that's kind of delaying things. In other years, we've seen where the winds kind of come in from the opposite direction and kind of start spreading things out, cooling things down, and that kind of stops the ice loss a little bit earlier. So we've looked at the dates. They are getting slightly later, but not significantly. It's not really helping us predict any kind of date, let's put it that way.
Okay.
So I'm trying to understand this, just put very simply. This is kind of like the last day of winter, the last day of fall, the first day of winter, trying to put it in terms of and now starting tomorrow, it's going to stay colder for a while.
In a way it is, but it's kind of more, it's a little more, a little looser than that, I guess, because, the Arctic's a big place. The Arctic Ocean's about the size of the lower 48. So, it's kind of like, you're getting different weather in different places. And like I said, things have already started freezing up in some places, but it's still melting in others. It's kind of like the, it's like turning the corner. We're entering the turn, and then, but we're not quite going the option. It's like a hairpin turn, maybe. We've kind of gone down the bottom, and now we're turning it back around, and we're kind of in the middle of that turn, but not quite heading back up yet.
Okay. And go ahead.
Yeah, in some ways, it's more of a symbolic. It's the lowest there is. I mean, for the season, so it's a symbolic end of the season, but it's not quite the same as a change of season per se.
And again, it looks like this is going to be the second lowest year,
right.
I guess inversely, the second greatest amount of summer melt.
That gets a little trickier because it depends on what our maximum was.
And I
haven't actually looked at that. We've been low in the winter too. That we've always had low years. It wasn't quite as extreme this year in terms of the maximum. It's the second most open water we've seen in the Arctic. That's maybe the best way to frame it. in our satellite record. And I think the bigger story, you know, everyone watches the minimum and watches, and we do too, of course. It's like watching a horse race kind of thing. It definitely grabs everyone's attention, and, you know, what the minimum and what the rank will be. But it's also important to put it into the longer-term context. We've now got 42 years of data with this minimum being the 42nd. And the last 14 years, starting in 2007, that's the last third of the record. All of those 14 years, those are the 14 lowest years. So we're really seeing a very much Arctic than we did in the first two-thirds of the record. We haven't reached the 2012 record low yet, but this is the closest we've come. But we're still seeing this overall long-term decline in a really changed Arctic Ocean from what we used to see in the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s.
All right. Let's talk about the causes. Obviously, one is air temperature. You've talked about that, warm air blowing around, and that helps to melt the ice. Talk about this concept of Atlanticification, which seems to be a function of water temperature.
Yeah, that's a good question. So Atlanticification is basically what happens is the Atlantic ocean waters, basically the remnants of the Gulf Stream, flow up towards the Arctic along kind of the coast of Greenland, between Greenland and Norway, and they're warm, but they're salty, so they're pretty dense. Whereas the Arctic waters are cold, which tends to make things denser, but they're also fresh, less salty. And so they are actually less dense than the Atlantic water. The Atlantic water sinks beneath them. Now, the Atlantic water is warm, relatively speaking. It's above freezing. It's 1 or 2 degrees above freezing, typically, as it goes underneath the colder Arctic Ocean waters. And that warm water, that, you know, it may only be a couple degrees above freezing, but there's a lot of heat in that. There's a big mass of water there, and that contains a lot of heat. If that heat were to come up under the ice, that would melt the ice quite quickly and quite dramatically. But we've got that surface layer that's cold, and it prevents that warmer water from coming up. It sits down below. Now, some, just through conduction, heat does get up there, but it has not been very much. But what we're seeing is, with the ice going away, the surface waters in the Arctic are getting warmer, and that difference that's keeping the Atlantic water is starting to break down some, and there's some evidence that more of that heat from the Atlantic is coming up and helping to melt the ice. And we see that probably more likely, not as much in terms of the loss during the summertime, but in terms of a thinner ice cover and through the winter. And, of course, that does impact the summer because the thinner ice is more easily melted away during the summertime. And, indeed, this year is a really extreme low year on the Atlantic side. Things have been really low. The ice edge is about 85 degrees north, so that's about 300 miles from the pole. Is completely open water, essentially. And so we're seeing that. And we also had a ship up there as part of an expedition, the Polar Stern, a Draker, that's been frozen in the ice. They actually drifted out of the ice much sooner than they expected because the ice is drifting faster. They drifted out back about a month ago, or a little more than a month ago, and they're planning to stay in the ice through October or into October, and so they came out quicker than they thought. So they're like, "Well, let's go back into the ice because we've still got more research to do. We've still got more measurements we want to take," and so they sailed back in, and they actually were able. Because the ice, it wasn't completely gone, and they're in an icebreaker, but they sailed back up very easily all the way to the North Pole on the Atlantic side. And that may be an indication also of the warmer waters, that the ice is thinner and stuff. And they just kind of cruised up to the North Pole quite easily. And now they're back kind of drifting southward again and are finishing their measurements. But that's really quite stunning to be able to so easily sail up to the North Pole with almost no resistance from the ice. Small flows around, but easy to kind of push through.
And that's the first time this has happened?
That's the first time they've gotten through that easily. The Russians have nuclear icebreakers, really powerful ships that can crunch through ice. And, you know, they can kind of back and ram. What that means is they back up and push through and break through, you know, maybe 10, 12 feet, 15 feet of ice. But it's a very slow process, and they move quite slowly. This was, you know, it wasn't open water. You wouldn't want to do it without being an icebreaker, without a strengthened hull.
Right.
But they really encountered pretty low resistance and made it up very quickly. I don't know the specific times, but I would hazard a guess that they probably did it faster than any other ship has done it. Outside of perhaps a submarine, which does it underneath the ice, so they don't have to worry about the ice.
All right, let me reintroduce you, and we'll get back to this. We're speaking with Walt Meyer. He's a senior research scientist at the National Snow and Ice Data Center out of Boulder, Colorado. So let me get this straight. You have a ship whose objective was to sit in the ice for months and months and not come out of the ice. Not only did it get, like, you know, in effect, popped out of the ice, it then said, well, while we're out, let's just sail to the North Pole. And they were able to literally, you know, sail to the pole, which you say is highly unusual. Now, you also said open water is roughly 300 miles from the North Pole. And I love asking you this question every time you're on. So it's 300 miles. Open water is 300 miles from the pole. What is the prediction or the thoughts as to maybe when open water, quote unquote, as you might define open water, reaches the North Pole?
It's a good question. It's going to be. It's hard to say because there's a lot of year-to-year variability. We're looking at potential of what we call ice-free Arctic Ocean at the end of summer, which is, you know, less than 1 million square kilometers, which is just a little bit of ice north of Greenland. I would expect the pole to be opening up sooner than that. There actually was a recent paper just published a couple weeks ago in the journal Marine Policy that we've been looking at that's talking about this opening of this transpolar sea route, which is basically going across the North Pole or very close to the North Pole. And they're talking that, you know, that could open perhaps even within the coming decade, depending on how things go. I mean, right now, you know, we look at, it's 300 miles on the Atlantic side. It's somewhat more on the Pacific side. There's more ice there. But we're getting to the point where I think pretty soon there could be a year where you could sail pretty much across the pole or very close to it. And that's the most direct route from the Atlantic to the Pacific. The Northern Sea Route, which runs along the coast of Siberia, that's been wide open for several weeks now, and that's been commonly used in recent years. But you have to go along the coast of Russia. It's controlled by, it's Russian sovereign waters, and so it's controlled by the Russians. They have icebreaker escorts. And so it's a good route, but the transpolar route goes through international waters for most of the length, and it's shorter. So that could really cut things down and make navigation across the Arctic even more viable than it's becoming.
Now, as winter sets in, ice is going to recover, and it will envelop all, you know, most of the Arctic in such a fashion that you probably won't be able to sail through the Arctic, any portions of the Arctic in the winter, or is that possible now?
In theory, it's possible with icebreakers, right. But the ice gets pretty thick. In winter, once it starts freezing up, and we've seen it, it's slow to freeze up because the ocean has a lot of heat, which delays things.
Right.
But once the ocean loses its heat, the sun is down, you have 24 hours of darkness, the air is cold, it freezes up pretty quickly, and you fairly quickly get to, you know, 3 to 5 foot, 6 foot ice, even along the margins. And that's something that icebreakers can go through. So it's certainly possible to do that. But it's not very, I don't think it's very economic to do that.
Right.
So it's not going to be like a routine thing to do anytime soon. But the window of open water is getting, it's not only expanding in terms of space, in terms of more places you can go, the transpolar route, but also in time.
Right.
You know, it used to be you'd get a little bit of the coastline open up, you know, sometimes you might have the Northern Sea Route, even back in the 90s, open up a bit. You'd still want icebreakers, but it'd be a pretty narrow, you know, range of window, you know, of space to get through. But now it's become wide open, and you might be able to do that, you know, in the past, maybe for a week or two at the beginning of September, maybe. And now, like I said, the Northern Sea Route for several weeks now, and it's probably going to stay open for another, I would guess, probably another month, where before you really get significant ice growing in there. So, you know, now you're getting 2-3 months of window to sail through that, through the Arctic, compared to if in a good year you might have been, you know, had a couple weeks.
All right. And just so listeners know, we know that fresh water freezes at 32 degrees. What does salt water typically freeze at?
Yeah, so salt water, you know, the salt in the water depresses the freezing point. And of course, it depends how much salt you have.
Mm-hmm.
But the typical value is what we use is minus 1.8 Celsius, which is about 29 degrees, roughly 29 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's a few degrees cooler than fresh water.
Okay. And again, as this recovers, we talk about old ice and young ice, and of course we're going to see more and more young ice over time.
Right, and we see that already. The Arctic is becoming by what we call seasonal or first year ice that forms at over just one winter. The Arctic used to be, you know, characterized mostly, the Arctic Ocean was characterized mostly by what we call perennial ice or multi-year ice that has survived at least one summer and often survived numerous summers, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. That ice gets thicker each winter. The ice that survives will continue to grow over the winter. And so the older ice would be on average 3 to 4 meters thick. That's 10 to 13 feet thick, roughly. The ice that grows over the course of one winter, the first year ice, as I mentioned earlier, that's on the order of 3 to 6 feet thick. And so, you know, you're looking at half or less of the thickness of the ice. And that's now become the dominant ice cover within the Arctic Ocean. It used to be something that you only saw or mostly saw kind of on the outskirts of the Arctic, like in the Bering Sea off the southwest coast of Alaska or in Hudson Bay or in Baffin Bay, coast of Greenland. But now it's really becoming the dominant ice type of the Arctic Ocean. And the expedition that I mentioned earlier, one of the reasons that they're doing this expedition is that much of our knowledge of kind of the details of the ice and the chemistry and the biology and the mechanics of the ice cover came from stuff that was done 20 to 50 years ago. There were a lot of experiments in the 70s done by the Navy. There was a ship frozen in the mid 90s, but these were all done and multi-year ice on these thicker, older ice flows, and that knowledge was certainly important and certainly useful. But now the ice is different, and so you know we need to go back out and take more measurements. We've got a lot of satellite data now, which we didn't necessarily have, especially in the 70s. But that only takes us so far as to understand the details of the ice, what's under the ice, and the structure of the ice, you know, within the ice. And so that's one of the reasons why this experiment, which is called MOSAIC, which is an acronym, which I never remember what that stands for, but if you Google MOSAIC Arctic, you'll find a lot of information about it. It's been an interesting cruise. And that data is going to be really valuable because it's specifically, not only on the older, thicker, multi-year ice, but also doing data collection on the first year ice, which is the first large-scale experiment to really do that over a full year.
All right, well, we got to wrap up. As always, great to talk with you, Walt Meyer, Senior Research Scientist with the National Snow and Ice Data Center. And again, I think the surprising thing here is about that ship, albeit an icebreaker, a beefy, robust icebreaker, being able to sail to the North Pole, and open water only being 300 miles from the North Pole. And soon we'll have cruise lines, probably offering summertime, late summertime trips to the North Pole.
You know, there may well be, yeah.
Kids will want to go see Santa or
something. Well, there you go. There you go. We'll commodify that in some way. Thanks again so much for joining us, and we'll loop back with you in a few months to see how things ice is returning.
And how can we learn more? Do you have a website or anything that we can go to if someone wants to learn more about the work you do?
Yeah, our main website that we, if you want to know what the conditions are, it's called the Arctic Sea Ice News and Analysis. It's on nsidc.org. Just Google that or go to the NSIDC website, and you should be able to find it on the main page. And watch, we'll be making our announcement soon. I can't say what day exactly. It might be next week, but announcing soon the minimum. Like I said, it's going to be the second lowest unless something really weird happens, but we've been surprised before. But we will be making that announcement as well as the overall conditions of the summer. So look for that.
All right.
Thanks again, Walt. We'll be in touch.
All right. Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Okay.